Let's start today with follow-up from last week's State of the Union address. So much has happened in the last couple of days. Lunatic Republican Katie Britt, who delivered an unhinged and bizarrely theatrical Handmaid's Tale-esque rebuttal to Joe Biden's State of the Union, has made a critical admission indicating that she made a major mistake during that rebuttal, which is that the dramatic story of sexual assault that she told did not actually happen while Biden was president and has nothing whatsoever to do with President Joe Biden or evaluating the job he is doing on any issue at all. It's just a random story about something that happened years before Joe Biden was president. We go to an interview from Fox News Sunday with Republican Senator Katie Britt. She was doing everything she could seemingly to hold back tears and has no choice but to concede. Listen, it was a story. Happened under Joe Biden. What difference does it make? Yikes. Yikes.
Mayor, but let's talk about your response to this union address, which has gotten a lot of headlines. One of the fans was former President Trump. He loved it. He said it was compassionate and caring. But you've had a lot of critics out there. And I want to talk about specifically one anecdote that I've heard you tell before. It is a horrific story of a sex trafficking survivor. Nobody is questioning that the story happened, that she is actually who she is, says she is, and that this happened. The question is about the timing and the implication of you telling the story. The New York Times has this. Right. None of this happened during President Biden's administration, but that didn't stop the first-term senator from strongly implying that the president could have somehow prevented it from happening, using rhetoric that seemed calibrated to inflame public fears about immigration. Did you mean to give the impression that this horrible story happened on President Biden's watch?
No, Shannon, look, I very specifically said this is what President Biden did during his first 100 days. Minutes after coming into office, he stopped all deportations, he halted construction of the border wall, and he said, I am going to give amnesty to millions. Those types of things act as a magnet to have more and more people here.
I then remember the question is, did you tell a story that had nothing to do with Biden?
In his first 100 days, he had 94 executive actions. And those executive actions didn't just create the crisis, they invited it. I then contrasted it with my first 100 days. Shannon, I went to the border three times in my first 100 days in office.
Her words mean nothing. This is a habitual liar. What do her first 100 days have to do with whether she implied that something that happened decades ago happened under Joe Biden? Nothing.
And when I was there, I asked for the real, unvarnished truth. I wanted to sit down. I asked the Border Patrol agents. I asked the people there. I asked the victims, previous victims of drug cartels. Tell me what it's like. Tell me what we need to do. Tell me what we need to know.
And this has zero to do with that anecdote. So the Fox host goes back, to her credit, and says, but to be clear, the story has nothing to do with Joe Biden, right?
Okay, but to be clear, the story that you relate is not something that's happened under the Biden administration, that particular person.
I very clearly said I spoke to a woman who told me about when she was trafficked when she was 12. So I didn't say a teenager. I didn't say a young woman, a grown woman, a woman when she was trafficked when she was 12. And so listening to her story, she is a victim's right advocate.
Okay. So what she is saying is, fine, I included this story in a long list of the tragedies that relate to the Biden border policy, but I said I spoke to a woman to whom this happened when she was 12. So anyone should know that a woman means at least 18, 12, 18 minus 12, 6, 6, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so no, Biden couldn't have been president. But of course, the reason she included the story was to link it to Joe Biden's border policy. The reason she brought it up was to convince people that Biden is bad because this is something that happened to the woman 20 years ago. She's still lying even here. And by the way, the whole story of this woman was trafficked by a drug cartel, it all has nothing to do with the border specifically. it is a much bigger issue. And it also has nothing to do with Joe Biden. So she lies with an ease that should really scare all of us. But now let's go to Joe Biden's absolutely perfect response to this insane reaction from Brit. Joe Biden had the perfect reaction to that unhinged Handmaid's Tale-esque response to his State of the Union speech by Republican Senator Katie Britt. She says that she's talented and that he couldn't really understand the connections she was making. This is just absolutely perfect. Like, not even giving it a full response because it's so irrelevant. I love this. The Hill reports Biden on Britt's State of the Union response. I thought she was a very talented woman, which is, of course, a direct allusion to the fact that it was really like a performance. She took on a completely affected voice and demeanor like nothing she's ever done before. It was really a performance. It was not a response. Biden described it as she described her as talented. Quote, I just saw a little bit on television. Quote, I thought she was a very talented woman. I didn't quite understand the connections that she was making. This is the right type of response. These are people who are so fundamentally not serious, who shouldn't even be allowed to sit at the adult table, but because they bring only childish voices and ridiculous reactions that have nothing to do with what the adults are actually talking about. We have real problems to solve in this country. We have an important election coming up on which you could argue democracy hinges. And they send forward a senator who can do no better than to say, everything is so bad. I spoke to a woman who was trafficked. Yeah, 20 years ago, and it has nothing to do with Joe Biden. What are you talking about? So I love Biden taking it as seriously as it deserves to be taken, which is not seriously at all. It was a performance. As far as it being an act, maybe it deserves some kind of award, but that's really all it was. And she didn't make any sense whatsoever. So I like this. Sometimes you will see reactions to the reaction that give it too much attention or too much credit for being anything other than an unhinged tirade. This one was not only an unhinged tirade, but it was one delivered by someone whose connection to reality seems very, very tenuous at best. Now, I know that there are some in MAGA world that are pleased with Britt's speech, but there are many Republicans who have in the media and electeds who have said, what are we doing? This was the best we could do. This was the reaction that we decided we're going to put out there. And by the way, you know, the allegations about Biden being on drugs during the speech aside, which seemed to be not getting very much traction, there is one major indicator that the speech did everything that Joe Biden needed it to do. And it has to do with money. Let's talk about that next. Joe Biden's State of the Union speech went so well that he raised an insane amount of money in the 24 hours following the speech. NBC News reports Biden brings in $10 million in the 24 hours after the State of the Union. Now, I don't want to mince words here in terms of, for me, the fact that this is how we finance politics in the United States is bad. We need to get away from this campaign finance system. The fact that I'm reporting to you, this is a sign that the speech resonated with voters, doesn't mean I love the way that we finance politics and it should be based on fundraising. But these are some of the metrics we have. We already looked at one important metric, which was before and after the speech. Focus groups dramatically increased the percentage by which they believe the country was headed in the right direction. In one focus group before watching Biden's speech, in the low 40s, felt that the country was going in the right direction. After seeing the speech, it was the low 60s. That can just win the election for you. Like, when the election is as close as it always is in terms of it comes down to just a few states, and very often it's tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of votes in just those few states. If you can shift 40% of the country believe we're going in the right direction. 60% believe it. You've won the election. Now, I'm not saying Biden won the election with the speech. That's just one focus group. We're 7.5 months out from the election. But the point is, that's a very good sign. If listening to the speech makes people think, you know, maybe things are actually going in the right direction, that's very good. But then we get to the money. This is a very big deal. The candidate who raises more money usually wins. That's kind of an all else being equal when we're not talking about extenuating circumstances. And that is what is happening here. The financial haul, writes NBC News, dwarfs some of the president's biggest fundraising days in 2023 before his rematch with Donald Trump was set. And indeed, $10 million. And the fundraising is wild. We reported to you last week that Joe Biden is currently dealing with or working with about $100 million more dollars than the failed former president Donald Trump, who is having to spend a bunch of that money defending himself, legal fees, figuring out how he's going to pay for these various awards and defamation cases, fraud cases, etc. So there is no single sign that tells us what's going to happen in November. There is no reason that any of us should say, oh, I'm so comfortable with the results that I'm going to stay home. By the way, even if you were confident Biden were going to win, why would you stay home anyway? Don't you want to participate and say, hey, I was part of that? That's another thing where I understand the logic of those who say, if everybody thinks we're too far ahead, they'll stay home. Or if everybody thinks we're too far behind, they'll stay home because it wouldn't matter. I vote because I want to participate. That's it. I don't care whether it's going to be close or not. So we should even rethink this idea of, if I don't think my vote will be the difference maker, I will stay home. That seems farcical and also quite fallacious in many ways. But when we look at a number of these different indicators, certainly the strong economy is a good thing for Joe Biden. But the fact that so many people were convinced by the speech that the country is now going in the right direction, that's a great sign. The fact that so many people were encouraged to donate money to Joe Biden. You know, we talk about the enthusiasm gap. I don't for a second say Joe Biden is an exciting candidate, but I don't care about that. I care about accomplishments. And to me, the accomplishments are quite remarkable. Yeah, when Joe Biden speaks, I'm not on the edge of my seat with popcorn saying, I just couldn't possibly tune away from this because it's so titillating. But that's not what I care about. And a really good sign when we talk about nobody's enthusiastic to go out there. If you're donating money to Joe Biden, it's because you want him to remain president and you probably plan to vote. And so as a proxy towards enthusiasm, the extraordinary fundraising numbers, I think, are a really, really great thing to see. Later on in the program, we're going to talk about some other factors that could influence the November election, including the now secret. Yeah, it's not secret anymore because it's been reported on. But what has been a secret White House plan to try to get Benjamin Netanyahu to no longer be the prime minister of Israel, or at least for his coalition to fall apart. Very interesting double standards. Many of the leftists who denounce American involvement in trying to influence who leads other countries when it's Latin America are very happy about this. So we're going to talk about that later. We'll take a quick break. The program is just packed today. It's actually, I was shocked. I said to Pat, let's record this one because we may want to keep it in the future. I have been tracking my genealogy for years, and the service I've always used to put my family tree together is MyHeritage, which is why I asked them to be a sponsor. MyHeritage is the number one family history service because of how easy they make it to discover your origins and relatives with over 19 billion records. You don't need to know anything about genealogy. Just let MyHeritage do the work. For example, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see their instant discoveries feature here lets me add an entire branch of 28 people connected to my great-great-grandfather to my family tree, all with their info and photos. I found all kinds of amazing, unexpected things. We found this incredible photo here of an immigration record from the US-Canada border crossing for a relative born in 1895. I had no idea about this. It is super interesting. I'm showing some more of my discoveries here. it just connects you to your roots, where you come from. It's also given me a lot of quality time with my family, showing them these discoveries. You can try MyHeritage totally free for 14 days. Go to davidpakman.com/MyHeritage. During that 2-week free trial, there are a ton of amazing things you can find out about your family and where you come from. Go to davidpakman.com/MyHeritage. The link is in the podcast notes. One of our sponsors today is BetterHelp. Viewers of the show, listeners know I'm a big advocate of therapy. I think it's important to make it more accessible, remove any stigma that might be associated. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. And therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. BetterHelp is therapy done entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. Switch therapists anytime at no additional charge. I'm a huge believer in talk therapy, and BetterHelp is making it more accessible to more people. You can even find a therapist who specializes in certain areas, which maybe you can't find where you are geographically. There are lots of great benefits to doing therapy online. Get it off your chest. Visit BetterHelp. Go to betterhelp.com/Pakman Show today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Pakman Show. The link is in the podcast notes. Data brokers are constantly collecting huge amounts of information about what you do online, your address, phone number, email, financial info, even your political affiliation, and they sell that information to other companies. The FBI will sometimes even buy data in bulk to get information about Americans without a warrant. Your ex-girlfriend, your boss, anyone out there can use the publicly available data on search sites to find information about you. It's super easy. And worst of all, these data broker systems get hacked all the time, which really puts your data at risk, which is why you can end up getting scam calls and emails and the whole thing. The solution to all of this is our sponsor, Incogni. Incogni sends data removal requests to all major data brokers who are required by law to remove the information upon request. If any of the information stays online, Incogni will follow up about removal, and Incogni keeps you updated with details every step so you know what's going on and when the info is removed. What Incogni can accomplish is amazing. I use it myself. Go to incogni.com/Pakman and you'll get 60% off with the code Pakman. That's incogni.com/Pakman. Use code Pakman for 60% off. The link is in the podcast notes. The David Pakman Show continues to depend on your support. Our primary funding source, and the one that no one in big tech can shut off because they feel like it, is the website membership program. You go to joinpakman.com, you get yourself a membership, and you will get so many great perks. These perks will be coming out of your ears. The daily commercial-free show and bonus show in video or audio format, invitations to the members-only town hall events, an archive of shows going back to the beginning, of course, access to the members-only soundboard that mirrors the soundboard I have here.
Obama!
Exactly. All of those great member benefits and more when you sign up at joinpakman.com. And importantly, you know, a lot of people don't know this. Whenever you sign up to support whatever show you like on some kind of major platform, be it YouTube, Twitch, whatever, they take 10, 20, 30, sometimes 40% of every dollar that ideally would go to the creator. On our website, we just pay 2.9% for the credit and debit cards, and the rest actually gets to us. And so that's a really great thing as well. You can sign up at joinpakman.com and the coupon code SAVEDEMOCRACY24 will save you significantly off of the cost of a membership. Donald Trump hit a disgusting new low, even for himself, making fun of President Joe Biden's stutter during a speech in Rome, Georgia over the weekend, and then went on to glitch badly the entire speech, making up words and unable to say others. Wow. Not only is this guy disgusting, he really is a guy in a glass house who's throwing stones at everybody else. Let's start with the failed former president speaking to his adamant cultists, some of whom we'll hear from in a moment, and making fun of the fact that Joe Biden has had a lifelong stutter that he has dealt with, a medical issue.
Two nights ago, we all heard Crooked Joe's angry, dark, hate-filled rant of a State of the Union address. Wasn't it? Didn't it bring us together? Remember, he said, I'm going to bring the country together. I'm going to bring it together. No, no. He's a threat to democracy.
Nothing funnier than making fun of a stutter, right? I mean, what a guy, this Donald Trump. And then, by the way, barely able to coherently throw a sentence together. Not all. I mean, listen, he's mocked disabled people before. He's mocked veterans. He's mocked Joe Biden's stutter before. But the reality is that it's Trump who struggled to speak the entire speech, glitching very badly. Let's take a look at a couple of examples.
By far the most disgraceful part of Joe Biden's disservice is the divisive and angry speech. Which...
Getting confused by what's on the teleprompter, struggling to say Putin, calling him instead Potin, which, I mean, it's kind of an interesting nickname, but it's not what Trump meant to say. He's just really struggling to read his speeches.
When Trump was president, there were none of these problems. Israel wouldn't have been attacked. Ukraine and Russia wouldn't be fighting. I knew Potin. I know him very well.
He knows Potin better than anybody else. And Potin is really quite a guy. Trump then just seems confused while reading off of the teleprompter, this thing where he's reading it, he's looking at it, but it doesn't seem he understands the words.
Pundits and inside sources say that the attacks on me will be violent. They say that it's violent. The attacks, Biden said it. He said, you know what their whole plan is? It was just released the other day. It was leaked.
He just is confused. Was it released? Was it leaked? Did Biden say it? Who exactly is it that said it? Trump then talking about when his house was raided, and he says they raided with no raid. What? I mean, reason. Sorry.
They raided my house in Florida, Mar-a-Lago. They raided with no raid. They had no reason to do so. They violated.
Yeah. Trump then saying that we have to be crumb. We have to becrumb a nation. Wow, that's something.
Crime-ridden nation. We have become a nation like nobody thought possible.
We've become a nation that nobody would have imagined. And then lastly, Trump refers to compliments as compliments, really just doesn't recognize the stuff on his prompter. Every single speech.
Iraq. All compliments of an incompetent Iraq.
Yeah. And as you can see, that shoulder glitch happens again on this one.
All compliments.
So listen, Dr. John Gartner explained a lot of what this is. These are a number of different indicators that not everything is right in the brain, so to speak. But he continues to make fun of Joe Biden's stutter. And maybe the most disgusting part is that the crowd likes it. The crowd loves this sort of thing, and they are going to vote for this guy for whatever reason is in their mind. And that is exactly what I want to talk about next. We saw some interviews from Trump supporters outside Donald Trump's Rome, Georgia rally this weekend. And they admit what we have long suspected. Their reasons for voting for Donald Trump are completely backwards. If they actually cared about the things they claim to care about, they should not be voting for Donald Trump. They should be voting for President Joe Biden. We start with a woman at Donald Trump's rally. This is, you know, if this didn't have life altering consequences for millions of people, we could just laugh it off and say, ha ha, how uninformed these people are. Here's a woman who says she supports Trump. I hope you're sitting down for this. She supports Trump because she's a diabetic and insulin is so expensive. the Biden administration is the administration working to cap the cost of insulin. It's the Biden administration that cares about that. And here is a woman explaining why she supports Trump. Yes, she looks visibly disoriented. You're going to notice that. That's true.
So what is it about President Trump that made y'all want to come out and wait in line for hours to see him today?
Me specifically, I'm type 1 diabetic. So anytime that I have to get insulin, it's really hard
very
to.
Expensive too.
It's very expensive. And I believe that Trump has done, you know, what he can to help. And it's really appreciative. So
she really appreciates what Trump has done on insulin. And yet it's been the Trump administration, when it existed, that showed a commitment to allowing healthcare to exist in a market environment. Whatever it costs, whatever the pharmaceutical companies can charge. But it is actually Joe Biden who has shown a commitment, not only on insulin, but on other drugs, to say, hey, this stuff's too expensive. We've got to negotiate. You've got to come to the table. We're going to have to offer it, starting with Medicare recipients and eventually to everybody, at a lower cost. Another woman is asked why she loves Trump. And she says he's just so relatable. Really? Is he? I that's not something that I've noticed before.
For you, what is it about President Trump that makes you think he's one of the best presidents?
He is somebody that people can relate to. I mean, even though he's a multimillionaire, billionaire, he has that hometown personality. We can talk to him, you know, we can hear him, and it's good.
I feel like that's going to be studied in textbooks. How can a billionaire relate to the average working class American so well? But he does it and he nails it when he's talking. I'm like, he's fine.
You know, I think that there will be a lot of textbooks written about this era. I don't think they're going to be about how billionaire Trump managed to relate so well to the average man and woman. I don't think that's going to be part of what is in the textbooks. And, you know, I start to feel bad for these people. Trump hates these people. Trump is disgusted and repulsed by these individuals. He spent his entire life as a rich kid from New York City, isolated and trying to stay away from folks like this. They now happen to be his constituents. And the constituents think Trump likes them for anything other than the fact that they can donate money and they can vote for him. And we saw it. We saw it so many different ways. Trump doesn't like these people. And when they are no longer useful to him, he doesn't want a thing to do with them. But when we talk about Don the Con, he's convinced them that he does like them. And that already is really an incredible achievement. A gentleman, and I use that term loosely, outside Trump's Rome rally, Rome, Georgia, by the way, was asked, what do you want to hear from Trump? And the guy didn't exactly have an answer.
What are some of the things y'all are hoping to hear the president say today?
Yep.
I want to hear him tell us that he's going to be there for 2024. I mean, we're here. I'm excited. This is the first time I've been here and at a rally, and I just want to support my president.
There you go. Hopefully Trump will tell us, I'm going to be there for 2024, really hitting the most important issues. Here's a woman at the Trump rally who says she's concerned about the Russian propaganda. She doesn't even know it's Russian propaganda. She's concerned about the Russian propaganda story that 60,000 Ukrainian children were kidnapped by Western rich folks so that they could traffic them for sex. And she knows Trump is going to stop it. This is QAnon type stuff. It's mixed and meshed and sort of you put it in one of those salad spinners and just mush it all together. She's fallen for Russian propaganda, doesn't even know it, thinks Trump's going to save everybody from it.
Very moment in the Ukraine war. And let's not forget about the 60,000 kids that's missing from Ukraine for human and sex trafficking. I mean, our children are not
trafficking. That's the hell of a pronunciation.
Sale, and we need to make a bold statement with that.
Right. That's Russian propaganda. That's not a real story. She completely fell for it. And again, if you can create fake problems that then you can solve, that's a genius way to propagandize to voters, because there are real problems, right? What do we do about income inequality and wealth inequality in the country? That's a real problem. Trump has no, it's not even clear Trump wants to solve it, but he certainly has no solution to it. So it makes it more difficult to propagandize. If you can make up a problem and then say, I will solve it, then you go, oh, I fixed it. There are 60,000 children that were trafficked by Watermelon Head Adam Schiff. We're going to get them all back. Hey, We got all those 60,000 kids back. See, you can't find any evidence now of the 60,000 kids. Right, because there was never evidence of it. You made up the problem and now you say you solved it. That's perfect for this crowd. That's exactly the way you get them to vote for you. Here's one last clip. Here is a very bold prediction from a gentleman at the rally. He says this November, Trump is going to win, not with 51% of the popular vote, not with 55, not with 60 or 65, not even with 70% of the popular vote. This gentleman predicts Trump will win with, listen to this.
Been on the Trump train for, you know, about 8 years now, and it's been a great adventure. I met a lot of great folks. Then I had Real America's Voice. I took the wrap off and did Real America's Voice for a while, and then put the wrap back on, and
so
now we're back.
Same bus,
yeah. Now we're back with the Trump bus. I'm rolling hard, and things looking really good. I'm expecting about 90% of the vote will go to Trump.
I think
90% of the vote, this gentleman believes, is going to go to Donald Trump in November. Now, I want to have I want to address this as if it's a serious thing. Do you think this guy is so disconnected from the reality of American politics and the impossibility of Trump or Biden getting 90% of the vote that he thinks it's something that really could happen? Does this guy really think either candidate could get 90% of the vote? Or is it something you say to signal your loyalty to the cult leader, knowing that it's not actually going to be the case? Or does it all relate to things you've misunderstood or been propagandized to with regard to the so-called election is rigged stuff? Like, in other words, has this guy taken hook, line and sinker the election is rigged stuff to the point that he thinks the real level of support for Trump is 90%? I don't know which it is. But only someone who has either been brainwashed or is the epitome of ignorance could believe that either candidate, when it's Biden and Trump in 2024, could end up with 90% of the vote. If anything, it tells us he doesn't really understand anything about politics. Let me know your thoughts. An insane weekend in Rome, Georgia. We will take a break. After the break, the secret plan to force Netanyahu's coalition to collapse in Israel that's being discussed in the Biden White House. Very interesting. We'll be right back. We all know that person who loves taking photos, but they have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands, in the case of some folks I know, of pictures just wasting away on their phone. You can put them to good use with a unique, stylish digital picture frame from Aura Frames. I got these Aura frames for my parents and preloaded them with pictures of the baby, and my parents love it. And I can add more pictures from wherever I am, and they pop up on their frames. It's so easy to see why Aura has been named the number one digital picture frame by Wired and by the New York Times. My favorite part is you can use a QR code on the outside of the box to load it with pictures, so you can still hand off the gift brand new in the box, but it's already preloaded with the pictures. Then you and the recipient can add pictures via the app. No cables or USB. It's all over Wi-Fi, super convenient, and it comes with unlimited storage. Load as many pictures as you want. For a limited time, my audience gets $20 off their best-selling frame. Go to AuraFrames.com and use code Pacman. That's A-U-R-A frames.com. Promo code Pacman to get $20 off Aura's best-selling frame. The info is in the podcast notes. Terms and conditions apply. Everything you do online can be tracked by your internet service provider, tech companies, the government, hackers, unless you use a VPN to encrypt your online activity, hide your IP, and make yourself anonymous. The VPN I use is Private Internet Access. They are the only VPN to prove multiple times in court they do not log your internet activity. Their stringent no-log practices are independently audited by Deloitte. Private Internet Access has a next-generation server infrastructure with IP addresses in 91 countries in all 50 states. It's one of the only VPNs fast enough for streaming video and downloading large files. Private Internet Access lets me access a bunch of Argentinian soccer that I otherwise wouldn't have access to. It's super easy to use. You turn it on once, you forget about it. You don't need to be a computer expert. Private Internet Access has a 30-day money-back guarantee, 24/7 customer support, and my audience gets private internet access for 83% off. This comes out to just $203 a month, plus 4 extra months for free. Go to piavpn.com/David. The link is in the podcast notes. Amid growing frustration with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the Biden White House is now exploring some way of forcing Netanyahu out or crumbling his coalition. This is super interesting, not only because of the facts of the situation, but also because some of the people that like the idea normally oppose this sort of American intervention when it comes to leaders abroad. And we're going to talk about all of it. The Times of Israel has an article, which we will link to, White House exploring how to force Netanyahu out, according to a report. And it says that frustration with Netanyahu's handling of the Gaza war is leading U.S. officials to explore what can be done to force the collapse of his government, according to an unconfirmed U.S. news report. An Israeli expert who frequently consults for U.S. officials is quoted by New York Magazine as saying, quote, "I have been asked by a serious administration figure what it is that will force the Netanyahu coalition to collapse. They were interested in the mechanics. What can we demand which will collapse his coalition?" This is based on the underlying report here in New York Magazine's Intelligencer. The Biden plan to ditch Netanyahu, the come to Jesus moment, is already here, according to Israeli and U.S. sources. Much of what this relates to is that Benjamin Netanyahu seems determined, one could say, to ignore the warnings and limitations that the Biden White House is attempting to impose on Israeli military action in Gaza, and to blow through them and to do whatever the hell he wants. Now, I have a couple of different views to present to you on this. And I do think it's important that we be very honest about the double standards that many of us, including many of you, hold. There is a longstanding principle that many on the so-called progressive left will hold, which is that we are against American intervention and influence when it comes to the leaders of foreign countries. Now, usually the way it goes is individuals who are part of the revolutionary left, as we call it, criticizing American involvement in Central and South America, Nicaragua, Bolivia, Venezuela, and other places. And I agree with the criticism. And generally speaking, the criticism is, you know, the U.S. and the CIA have its tentacles, and they will say, we're going to try to get this leader out. We'll put in this other leader. Often the preferences are individuals that are to the right of the leader that is already there. And so much has gone wrong with that approach in foreign policy by the United States over the last many decades. And I think a criticism of it is important when it is what is going on. Now, where that criticism sometimes goes too far is that some in the revolutionary left will say that any opposition group in Central or South America or in other parts of the world is American controlled opposition. It's a psyop. It's a whatever. OK, it's not always the case. Now, I think Netanyahu's a disaster. As I've said before, we talk about an actual peace plan in the Middle East. We talk about, I would like to see a two-state solution, and I've laid out the parameters of how I imagine it would most likely work. We can't even, I mean, the conversation about a peace plan is dead right now. The idea that in the midst of what's happening with Benjamin Netanyahu at the helm and with Hamas at the helm in Gaza, we are going to get a peace plan, it's laughable. That all being said, as much as I would like to see Netanyahu go, if the principle is we don't want the U.S. government meddling and trying to influence who the leaders of foreign countries are, we have to oppose this, right? Or don't we? What's the reason that we don't? What's the reason that in this case we can say, oh, no, actually, it's fine. So there is a double standard. Maybe sometimes double standards are OK. I don't know. But I raise this with you to say, until Netanyahu goes and until Hamas goes, I don't see any path to a credible and serious discussion of what I believe is going to be the only kind of solution we would have, which would be a two-state solution. But no matter what solution you think there should be, these are not going to be the arbiters to negotiating that. That's on the one hand, and it would be a great thing for Netanyahu to go. Am I not reopening the door to exactly that which I oppose, which is American meddling and interference in who are the leaders of foreign countries? And for all of the critiques about puppet governments and psyops and controlled opposition and staged opposition, it seems that we have to consider that here as well. So I want to hear from those folks in the audience who normally take the side of we need to oppose any such opposition or involvement, rather, by the American government. Let me know your thoughts. I want to hear from you. We will see where this goes. I have a fascinating video of a union member Trump supporter realizing, what the hell am I doing? I've got to vote for Joe Biden. This is absolutely fascinating video, and it's worthy of significant analysis. Now, let me set this up for you. Union Proud Warrior is a pro-union organization. They say that they work to revolutionize the labor movement through innovation and outreach. And one of the members of Union Proud Warrior spoke to a union worker. And the union worker says, I support Trump. He is then shown video of Trump saying, unions aren't so good. I like right to work. Right to work means no union protections. And the guy changes his mind in the course of learning this. Let's watch the video and then we will talk about it, because there is a lot going on here. A lot going on here that matters.
Is right?
Absolutely. I'm a union guy.
Well, he's for it.
Got to have right to work. I like right to work.
Sorry, I started the video in the wrong spot. Here we go.
Who did you vote for in 2016?
Trump.
And how about 2020?
Trump.
What do you like about Trump so
much? You know, like, I'm not real political, but he doesn't seem like a politician. I'm a working guy, you know, blue collar. So, like, I feel like he's fighting for us.
Did you know he's for right to work?
Get the f*** out of here.
Well, you know what right to work is, right?
Absolutely. I'm a union guy.
Well, he's for it.
Gotta have right to work. I like right to work. I mean, my position on right to work is 100%. They decided not to go union. And that's a great honor as far as I'm concerned.
Man.
So let me see that again. Let me see.
You want to see it again? No problem.
Yep. Gotta have right to work. Gotta have right to work. I like right to work. I mean, my position on right to work is 100%. They decided not to go union. And that's a great honor as far as I'm concerned.
What do you think of that, man?
Man, I don't know about that. I'm a union guy. The union is the most important thing to me. It's my livelihood. It's giving me the opportunity to have my family and own the things that I do. After seeing his view, I'd have to say that it's changed. You would have to vote for Biden this year.
So there's so much going on here. Now, first of all, we have to acknowledge that there is a concern for someone who says the union's given me everything. The union is everything to me. It's given me my life, my livelihood. It's how I provide for my family. And you don't know Trump's view on unions? You're voting for the top official in the United States of America. You acknowledge the union is the most important thing and it's what's given you the life that you have. And you don't take the time to find out what the guy you voted for twice already and plan to vote for again believes about unions. That's number one. And that's a concern, because that is a low information way of voting. So that's the first thing here. And we have to acknowledge that. Now, not everyone reacts this way when they are shown contradictory information to their beliefs. Some of them, you know, we saw with Luke Beasley's interview of the guy who he showed Trump's tweet about the Trump's troth about the Constitution. The guy looked at it and said, no, it's got to be fake. It's clearly somebody posted that. It's not real. And no. Sometimes they just reject the trust. They don't trust the evidence. They don't believe that it's actually real. So it is a great thing that this guy, when shown that, he stuck to the union's the most important thing. I've got the information. I'm no longer voting Trump. I've got to go vote for Biden. Biden is the most pro-union president in American history, I would say. And so it's also remarkable to me that a guy who says the union's the most important thing doesn't know that we've got the only president in Joe Biden who ever joined striking union workers on the picket line. No other president has done that. Trump's against unions. The guy's like, I'm a Trump guy and I'm in the union. So good for the guy because he changed his mind. But I want to also mention another thing. We've talked about how you've got these homophobic Republican elected officials. They're against gay marriage their whole career. All of a sudden, they've got a gay nephew, a lesbian daughter, whatever. They see the light and they go, oh, it's my family now that's being discriminated against. You know what? I'm now for gay marriage. We still welcome that. But there is something about you only care about it when it affects you that I don't love. So I'll give you an example. I'm not in a union. I have a couple friends in unions, but not too many. I have nothing to gain from supporting a pro-union president personally, but I do it because I think it's the right thing to do. And I understand in many industries the importance of organized labor and allowing workers to organize for better conditions and benefits and wages and all of that. So I also would love it if there were motivations that were not just what's better for me personally and thinking about what's better for others as well. This guy's in a union. Part of it is he realized Trump's position isn't good for him and Biden's position is better. He is motivated personally because of what it means to him to have a president supporting a union versus not. That's totally fine. We've got to give this guy credit. He was given the information and he changed his mind, and that's all a very good thing. But it is also driven by what is good for him personally. And one of the problems we have in the United States, and I've talked about it before, is that so much of people's positions is motivated just by what's good for them rather than thinking about others. When we think about, as I've said before, when it comes to like health insurance and getting health insurance to everyone and it being affordable and whatever. Listen, I'm self-employed. I can afford to buy myself okay enough insurance. And, you know, the deductibles and the copays, I can afford them. I'm fine. It's not for me that I'm pushing for a system that is better for healthcare. It's for people who are suffering under the system that we have. And so I think that that sort of empathy and sympathy is lacking right now in American politics. And if, you know, okay, this guy figured out Biden's better for him, so he's voting for Biden. But I think there's also something to be said for what is better for groups of people you may not actually be a part of. That's an important aspect to this as well. So super interesting work from Union Proud Warrior. Let me know your thoughts. I'm going to learn more about this organization and see if they have more videos like this for analysis, but very, very compelling. If you're struggling with anxiety or depression, you're certainly not alone. Millions of Americans are searching for ways to just feel better. Many feel they've exhausted every option. They don't know where to turn. If that sounds like you, then guided ketamine therapy from MindBloom could be a game changer. Our sponsor, MindBloom, can help you potentially feel better faster. I've been reading about ketamine therapy and ketamine treatment for a long time for depression and anxiety. We've done interviews about it on the show. There are many promising studies, and MindBloom is the leader in ketamine therapy. They've helped tens of thousands of people overcome anxiety and depression. MindBloom's expert clinicians and guides can help you feel better and quickly, not weeks or months. And you can complete treatment entirely from the comfort of your home. In a study of over 1,000 MindBloom clients, 89% reported improvements in anxiety and depression after just 4 sessions. And now MindBloom has new programs that go beyond just depression and anxiety to overcome life's everyday challenges. MindBloom is offering my audience $100 off your first 6-session program when you sign up at mindbloom.com/Pacman and use the promo code Pacman. Break free from the anxiety, the depression, feel better with MindBloom. That's MindBloom.com/Pacman. Use code Pacman for $100. The info is in the podcast notes. President Joe Biden has admitted that he used the wrong word. He made a mistake during his State of the Union speech by using the term illegals, and MAGA is pouncing on him. Except, isn't this actually what we want? Wouldn't it be nice if Trump maybe at some point had said, hey, you know what? I did make a mistake. Well, no, the standards are completely different. Here is Joe Biden being interviewed by Jonathan Capehart over the weekend after his State of the Union address. Many important topics came up, and we will start with the question about the use of the term illegal.
You know, I noticed the look of surprise on your face when you walked into the chamber and you saw Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was priceless. You feigned shock at seeing her. But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Laken Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing. We have to control the border and a more orderly flow, but I don't share his view at all.
So listen, Joe Biden is just straight up saying, yeah, I used the wrong word. Shouldn't have said it. Undocumented is the term that I should be using. And MAGA is pouncing all over him by saying, look, he doesn't even know what he's saying. He doesn't even know what words, blah, 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 blah. Well, Trump used these words all the time. MAGA uses these words all the time. They never admit that there's a mistake. They never admit that there's a problem. And now they're criticizing Biden for using the term that they actually believe is the word that should be used. Now, I think there's another aspect to this as well, which is especially in conversations with right wingers who use the word illegal. Sometimes you use it in reference to the fact that they use it. Right. So sometimes I will get a caller who talks about, quote, illegals, and I will say the so-called illegals you refer to or something like that. I don't think that there's a hard and fast rule that in every context it's wrong. The context in which Biden used it did play into that dehumanizing use of the word, should have said undocumented, and he says it, and then they attack him for it and go the dementia route and go that it's the wrong word. They use that word all the time. Now, I want to get to some other interesting moments from this very same interview. Joe Biden, interestingly, defended those voters in Michigan and elsewhere who voted uncommitted because they aren't happy with Joe Biden's, it's not Joe Biden's handling of the Israeli-Gaza situation, but Joe Biden's response to Israel's handling of it. And Joe Biden, I think, is doing the right thing here by sort of extending an olive branch and saying, I understand why you're so upset.
You're heading to Michigan, where on the campaign trail, probably in the next few days, where more than 100,000 people voted uncommitted in the primary to protest your handling of the situation in Gaza. Some have said they will never vote for you. One told Charles Blow of The New York Times, and I'm quoting, as bad as Mr. Trump's rhetoric was and him putting a travel ban on five Muslim countries, he wasn't overseeing and actively arming a genocide. Those are tough words. What's your response to that widely shared sentiment?
It's not widely shared. You guys make judgments you know you're not capable of making. That's not what all those people said. What they said was they're very upset, and I don't blame them for being upset. There's families there. There are people who are dying. They want something done about it. And they're saying, Joe, do something. Do something. But the idea that they all think is genocide is just not, that's a different situation. Look, I can fully understand, and can't you? You have a family member there. A family member, families are come from a family that is still isolated there and may be victimized. It's understandable they feel that way. And that's why I'm doing everything I can to try to stop it.
So listen, there are people who will never, ever, ever be satisfied with anything Joe Biden says or even anything Joe Biden does on this issue. The ship has sailed and they're not reachable. But there are many people who want to see the discussion of a ceasefire that Biden brings up in a moment. And again, what's strategic about it is he's aware of the fact that Hamas is committed to just continuing to do what they did on October 7th. So there's a strategic use of the term ceasefire. We're talking about a temporary stop in hostilities to get hostages out, to get aid in, everybody knows at the first opportunity Hamas is going to go back and then Israel is going to go back. But I think that it is smart to start using the term ceasefire, which he does in the next clip that I'm going to play for you, to acknowledge that those who voted uncommitted are completely justified in expressing their displeasure. And at the end of the day, the point is, what can the Biden administration do to get as many of those folks voting for them in November once it comes down to it's either Biden or it's Trump who said demolish Gaza, finish it once for all, or whatever the case may be? This came up during my meeting last week in D.C. with Vice President Kamala Harris. And I talked about, I get phone calls from people who say, oh, I'm undecided. And I go, OK, who are you deciding between? And they go, well, honestly, it's nobody. It's just staying home or Biden. I'm just furious with Biden. And what is the best way to handle that? And the conversation with the vice president was off the record. But what I can tell you is that the attitude of people are right to be upset. People are right to come to us and say, hey, I don't like this. And we need to understand that we understand their perspective as well. Biden says he wants a ceasefire. Using this word, I think, is strategic at this point. Very much so.
I want to see a ceasefire. And I'm starting with a major, major exchange of prisoners for a 6-week period. We're going into Ramadan. It should be nothing happening. And we should build off of that ceasefire. And look, I've spoken with the majority of the Arab leaders from Saudi Arabia to Egypt to Jordan. They're all prepared to fully recognize Israel and begin to rebuild the region. And that's the focus. What comes after Gaza? What's next? It's a tough decision, but there's a lot that can be done.
So listen, I don't know at the end of the day how many typical Democratic voters are going to stay home in November because they're angry. But we need to do everything we can to minimize that number, because if your concern is the Palestinian people, the last thing you want is Trump. And I don't know, you know, it would be a Pyrrhic victory to succeed in preventing Biden from being reelected because you're angry with him, to then see Trump come in and say, I don't care what you do, do whatever the hell you want. That would be the epitome of a Pyrrhic victory. I am going to show you today a Republican using a version of that question is offensive, which is a tactic that they denounce all the time. Radical and repugnant Republican Congresswoman Nancy Mace was interviewed on ABC by George Stephanopoulos. George Stephanopoulos asks her, you claim to care about rape victims. You're supporting a guy who has been found to be a civilly liable rapist. That doesn't make sense. Nancy Mace doesn't like it. And she goes with this, you're trying to shame me because I'm the victim of a sexual assault. What? Look at this.
Yes, this morning, and you've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about Donald
Trump. No, you are shaming me.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim. And I find it.
This is really ugly. What she's doing is really ugly. This is the Republican version of that's such an offensive question, which they love to say, oh, what does that even mean to be offended? Just answer the question factually. He's not shaming the victims of rape. He's shaming her for supporting a perpetrator of it who did shame, actually defame, his own victim. And she goes, oh, you're shaming victims of rape, including me. What? That's not at all what he's doing.
Disgusting. And quite frankly, E. Jean Carroll's comments when she did get the judgment, joking about what she was going to buy, it makes it harder for women to come forward when they make a mockery out of rape, when they joke about it. It makes it harder when other women joke about it, and she's joked about it. I find it offensive. And I also find it offensive that you're trying
to... Now she is offended. She's pulling out all the stops.
Shame me with this question.
I'm not trying to shame you.
You are.
Well, in fact, I
have dealt with this for 30 years. You know how hard it was to tell my story 5 years ago when they were doing a fetal heartbeat bill and there were no exceptions for rape, incest, rape or incest in there? I had to tell my story because no other woman was coming forward.
I'm just asking.
No rape victims were represented. And you're trying to shame me this morning.
I'm just asking.
And I find it offensive. And this is why women won't come forward.
This is absolutely the biggest double standard. These are the folks who always say, saying I'm offended is a cop-out. These are the folks who always say, just answer factually and stick to the facts and do blah, blah, blah. She is supporting a guy who is civilly liable for rape and then defamed the victim. And she claims to care about victims. So why is she doing it? And she goes, you're shaming me. You're shaming me because I'm a rape victim. What? Here's one more moment from this. This went on for a while. It's pretty wild stuff.
I still get judged for it today.
I'm asking you a very simple question.
You're shaming me for my political choices.
I'm asking you a question about why you endorse someone who's been found liable for rape.
It was a civil court. And by the way, she joked about the judgment and what she was going to do with all that money. And I find that offensive.
I'm asking you
but
about
as
the man
a
who's...
rape victim who's been shamed for years now because of her rape, you're trying to shame me again by asking me this political question.
So, you know, she's like, oh, when you ask it again, you're shaming me even more. Let me just weigh in on one other issue because we've already dealt with it's offensive and this whole thing. She says, well, you know, it was a civil trial. Civil and criminal trials are both real proceedings. A jury did find that Trump was liable for sexual assault. There was a judgment for $80 million. The judge said it constituted rape. Her idea that it all doesn't count because it's civil, it's just a different standard. It's a different purpose. But the idea that it is a less than thing, particularly when the statute of limitations has expired. And why, by the way, maybe it's because of the shame she's talking about, which many on her side have actually said is not even a real thing. So whether you're a survivor or not, why are you supporting a guy who has been found civilly liable of rape? That's the question. She did not answer it. She attacked the interviewer. She attacked the question. And she said, I'm offended. That's the playbook they claim the left uses. And they denounce it when the left uses it. We have a voicemail number. That number is 219-2-DAVID-P. Here's a caller who really liked how I handled last week's anti-vaxxer call. Listen to this.
Hi, David. I was just watching your show when the anti-vaxxer called in. And
yes.
I'm just astonished at your brain that you have all these facts in there because you talk on many, many, many subjects. And it appeared that you didn't know what this caller was saying. It appeared like it was a live caller.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to ask me when they call in. That part is absolutely true.
And you have all this there. And I couldn't help but just be smiling ear to ear, just thinking, damn, that's a smart person. And I'm so glad you're out there doing this and educating the public. And I'm going to go on later today and buy a subscription, whatever it's called. I'm subscribed to you, but I haven't paid yet, but I'm totally going to pay after this.
I really appreciate that. And yes, the calls are just, it is what it is. They come in and they come in. Really appreciate that and appreciate everybody who's been sending very nice messages lately. A lot of horrible messages continue, but some very nice messages from people saying it's an election year. I really am understanding what's at stake here. I appreciate what you're doing. I'm going to get a membership, and we love that. Get access to the bonus show, by the way, by becoming a member. Today, producer Pat is back. We'll hear about what he's been up to. I will go into way more detail about my meeting last week in D.C. with Vice President Kamala Harris and more. What a bonus show for you today. If there is any bonus show worth actually saving, it would be today's. And you can sign up for it at joinpacman.com. I'll see you then. We'll be right back.